Today on Maine Calling, Brigadier General Diane Dunn. For the first time in Maine history, the person in charge of the Maine National Guard, Maine Emergency Management Agency, and Veterans Services is a woman. Brigadier General Diane Dunn assumed command last month, replacing Major General Douglas Farnham, who retired from service. General Dunn is a Maine native who served in the military for 33 years, throughout that time rising through leadership positions in the Maine National Guard. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will meet her and talk about her priorities in her new role. From dental care for veterans to cybersecurity, disaster preparedness to the Arctic, she has a lot on her plate. And we'll discuss what it means to her to make Maine history. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we talk with the first woman to lead Maine's National Guard. Brigadier General Diane Dunn leads the Maine Army and Air National Guards, oversees the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services, and the Maine Emergency Management Agency. At a change of responsibility ceremony last month, Governor Mills noted General Dunn's outstanding and historic career.
In 2014, General Dunn became the first woman to command a brigade in the Maine Army National Guard. In 2020, when she was promoted to Brigadier General, she then became the first female general officer in the 200-year history of the Maine Army National Guard. And now, General Dunn will make history again by becoming the first woman in Maine state history to serve as Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard and Commissioner of the Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. She is deeply respected by the men and women of the department who have served with her and very qualified for the job.
Well, General Dunn, welcome to Maine Calling. We're thrilled to have you here.
Good morning, and thank you.
And to all of you in the audience, if you'd like to join the conversation, you know you can do so with a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I know that you have a lot on your plate, General Dunn, and I want to ask you about all sorts of things from the Arctic to cybersecurity. But first, I want to ask you about the historic nature of your appointment. I know that you don't like to dwell on all the firsts. You've been hearing, as Governor Mills said, about firsts your whole life. But it is true that you have been a mentor for young women and that you realize that your appointment is not only symbolic, but also very meaningful to many people. And so I'm wondering if you had time to reflect on it and what you think about that, the historic nature of your appointment.
You're right. I do try to avoid some of the recognition of the first, because I want to make sure that people recognize the importance of being qualified and being a competent leader, which is what we want everyone to strive for. So with that, it's how to balance it, recognizing it is historic and celebrating that as an opportunity for everyone to know the great opportunities that exist here in Maine for, you know, a good old homegrown Mainer like me, that those opportunities exist right here in our state. And I've been so blessed throughout my career. So I do want to celebrate the fact that I have had these opportunities and as a way to communicate to others what exists here in the state of Maine.
All right. You said homegrown Mainer. Let's learn a little bit about you. Where did you grow up and how did this path to military service happen for you?
Well, I'm a proud Mainer, was born in Farmington, Maine, like our governor, grew up in Jay, Maine for a period of time, also lived in Lewiston, Maine through early high school, and then moved away with my mom for the rest of my high school years, and then found my way after college back here in Maine. So I went to college out in southwestern New York, and my freshman year of college was able to come back to Maine, visit with my extended family that's here, and returned right after college and got married and have, you know, been here ever back in the great state of Maine ever since.
I've read that you started your career as a social worker, and I'm wondering, were you serving in the Guard at that point, or did you start as a social worker and then decide to join the Maine Guard?
I participated in ROTC in college, so that's really where the military piece started for me, and it was not something that I absolutely had on my list of things that I was looking to do. It was coincidence that one of my housemates in college, her brother was a part of the ROTC program and encouraged us to participate in a leadership class. So while I was busy being a student and a student worker to pay for college, playing basketball for a very small school, and my sophomore year, I did take the leadership class, had the opportunity to go to what they called the leadership course in Fort Knox, Kentucky, as a between my sophomore and junior year. And it was there that I competed and earned a scholarship, a two-year ROTC scholarship, which was pretty fantastic because I, at that point, didn't really have a way to pay for school. And so came back to college, accepted the scholarship, actually signed for that contract at the University of Maine in the summer while I was home, and met my husband, or to be husband at that point in time, who grew up in the same town I did, but we just didn't really know each other. And so through ROTC, finished my 2 years of school and returned to Maine and had a reserve component scholarship, what meant I was going to go in either the reserves or the National Guard, all the while being an undergraduate psychology major and looking for a job. So I came back to Maine, found employment in the Bangor area as a social worker, and at the same time joined the Maine Army National Guard. And how I chose the Maine Army National Guard instead of the reserve was at my graduation from Officer Basic Course, I happened to be sitting next to the liaison officer for the National Guard, and I really didn't know the difference at the time. And it was through that engagement that when I came back to Maine, I called, looked in the phone book, and found the number for the Maine Army National Guard, and I called and said, I'm a second lieutenant, and I have a requirement to join the reserve component. Can we talk?
And oh, my goodness. It's so interesting how so many of us, but it sounds like if not for the coincidence, if not for having that roommate and her brother, if not for sitting next to that man, your life may have been entirely different.
Absolutely. And I truly believe there's lots of divine intervention in there. And that theme will continue throughout my life. I balance a lot of my success on my faith and the importance that I have had growing up and believing that God has really led me to where I am and continues to open doors for me. And that's a platform that's very important for me to understand that I don't think that there's any pure coincidence. It's all, planned ahead. I just don't really know what is around the next corner.
Throughout your career in the military and in the Maine National Guard, have you felt some of the do you believe that you felt different pressures because you are a woman, or do you believe that you've been just on the cusp ahead of some of what women before you faced?
I will say very early on, I did not at all recognize that I was different because of my gender. I was somewhat blind to that, never even knew that some of the challenges I was facing may have been perhaps because of my gender. So I never went into any experience thinking my life was any different than the person standing to my right or the left. Mm-hmm. So that was some of my own personal lack of insight or wisdom at the time, but it was good I will say that being a little bit naive might have been helpful because I'm a very face value person. So I believe that every opportunity that existed for the person next to me was equally available to me as an individual. And being a competitive person, that probably is more of what fueled me than anything else. So I never really looked at it through a lens of being different. And I had the opportunity to be as competitive as everyone else that I was around. And yes, majority of that experience was with male peers and subordinates and leaders, but always felt welcomed and challenged and mentored, regardless of the fact that I might have been the only female in the room.
You have a lot on your plate. One of your three hats would probably be enough. Maine Emergency Management Agency, Veterans Services, and the Army and Air National Guard. I want to talk a little bit about the idea that what you're inheriting, the job that you have, has a mission that's changing dramatically, right? So, if you think about the Maine Emergency Management Agency, look at the storms that we've had this past year. If you look at the work that you're doing with the National Guard, you're really working on cybersecurity issues in the Arctic. And I will ask specifically about those, but General Dunn, just generally speaking, does it feel much more fast-paced today, right now, than in your past 33 years of service?
Adding those two extra layers of responsibility when it comes to Maine Emergency Management and the Bureau of Veteran Services, yes, the plate is different. What is on the plate is different. But the good news is that at this level, there are also many great leaders between me and, the individuals that are out there on the streets doing their job every single day. And so it's really important for me to remember my place and where that is, and the leaders that exist up and down and throughout the organization, that they are highly trained and competent, wonderful leaders themselves. And so I'm blessed to have a team that I can work with on a daily basis that really has so much capability and competency. So, as you said, Maine Emergency Management is dealing with the highest number of open emergency declarations that they've had, I think, in their history. But the team that we have at Maine Emergency Management is doing great work to provide recovery efforts for our communities and support them in request for FEMA reimbursements so that our communities can get back to some sense of capability for, the recovery efforts that they have. The plate is full, but it's different. And there are great teammates that I have that I can rely on to do some of the more hands-on work. And so it's important for me to remain focused on the up and out, as we call it, and the strategic initiatives that we have as an organization that includes the military, Maine Emergency Management, and the Bureau of Veteran Services.
Yeah, let me take a step back and just ask you, currently, how many National Guard, Army National Guard, and Air National Guard members are there serving in Maine, and how many units?
So, in the Army National Guard, there's just over 1,700 members. And in the Air National Guard, I believe, and again, I have not really dialed way down into the weeds on many of these things, but there are over 1,100 Air National Guard members across the Bangor units and the South Portland units. And the second part of your question was how many units or?
Yeah, or just, I know about, of course, everybody knows about the 133rd Engineering Battalion, Maine's most historic, but in the air refueling wing in that you talked about in Bangor and then in South Portland, I know their mission has shifted a little bit, but air traffic control, communications. What else? Tell us what Maine people may not know about the kind of work that National Guard and Air Guard service members are doing.
Yes. So for the larger part of the Army National Guard, we break it down into the engineers that you talked about and the logistics headquarters unit, which then has multiple units underneath it. So we have everything from a transportation company to a military police company, maintenance company, and people may or may not understand what that really means when we get down into those type of units. The Army also, as many people know, have its own aviation units. So the rotary wing, the helicopters that you see flying around, those are Army National Guard units. Unlike the fixed wing aircraft that the KC-135s, the air refueling tankers that we have in Bangor. And then we have cyber elements in both Army and Air National Guard that work collaboratively together and have some great exercises and real-world missions that they're working on. We have medical elements both in the Army and the Air National Guard. So we try to have the units that are here in Maine that are resources for our state in the domestic operations, and then also have units that have relevance in a federal mission in terms of defending our freedoms.
And I think a lot of people may not know that there is this cyber unit, especially here in Maine. And is that relatively new?
For the Air National Guard, not as new, and in the Army National Guard, a little, probably in the last 10 years. And so we're constantly changing our force structure in both the Army and the Air National Guard to evolve with the critical needs that we have across the nation and what is available and how we can provide resources not only for the state and recruiting bases, right? And I don't mean bases in terms of fixed locations. I mean the population that we have that is looking to serve and what are their interests and the skills and the tasks that they're looking to do, because that's important as well. As the world is evolving, so must our units to provide the defense that we need for our nation and hopefully have skill sets that people want to join. So that's another variable that we are always considering, and how do we evolve to keep pace with the needs of the country and the interests of those that are willing to serve.
We are speaking with Brigadier General Diane Dunn. She is head of the Maine National Guard. She's also head of the Maine Emergency Management Agency and Veterans Affairs. We are going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. My guest today, Brigadier General Diane Dunn, Adjutant General of the Maine Army National Guard and Commissioner for the Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. And I should have said Adjutant General for Maine Army and Air National Guard. Join the conversation by email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Major General John W. Libby, but everybody knows him as Bill, the retired Adjutant General of Maine National Guard. General Libby, I know that you're a big fan of Diane Dunn's and wanted to call in today.
Jennifer, great to talk to you again. Yeah, I am a big fan of General Dunn's, and imagine my excitement this morning in realizing that we're not only black bears, but we're fellow blue devils. I didn't know that about Diane, that she spent a couple of her formative years at Lewiston High School.
Yes, sir. Following in your footsteps, always.
Oh, my
General Li
footsteps were long gone by then.
General Libby, what's your advice, or what are your questions for General Dunn?
I don't need to offer any advice to Diane. She's got a firm grip on the throttle at this particular point in time. But let me toot her horn just a bit. She doesn't like this, but I feel I need to do it. In 1988, I met her for the first time. She was the freight movement officer in our transportation company. The freight movement officer is now the adjutant general of the Maine National Guard. She's done something right in her career. Commanded at the company level, the battalion level, the brigade level, been our chief of staff and the assistant adjutant general, one-star general, before being appointed by Governor Mills. And I commend the governor on her selection. She couldn't have done a better job. Oh, did I mention her battalion command was in Afghanistan? In a combat environment. So she has touched all of the right bases. if you were sketching out a military career, it would look exactly like hers, commanding at every level, combat where combat is available. That doesn't sound right, but those of us who wear the uniform understand that. And something significant in her background that people don't talk about, and I want to question her about this. She's had a couple of significant joint assignments with active component organizations. She was assigned to U.S. NORTHCOM in Colorado Springs, and also with the DISCA folks at Fort Sam Houston in Texas. And Diane, I'd like to ask you, how did those joint assignments impact you in terms of your leadership style and your ability to perform your duties today?
Thank you. They were absolutely foundational and phenomenal opportunities. And I'm blessed to have had the opportunity to go out to NORTHCOM and serve. And interesting enough, that was hugely valuable now as my engagement with Maine Emergency Management, because that too was looking at how we defend the homeland for catastrophic, mostly weather events, whether it was hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, earthquakes, all of those things. So my job at U.S. Northern Command was to work with all the 54 states and territories and helping them, making sure that they had militarily done the best that they could to develop emergency management plans that support their state and local government in the event that they had a major disaster, and where the state and its resources come into play with our federal partners. And so with that, I had the opportunity to engage with probably 10 different states and their adjutant generals and their emergency managers back in 2010 as a part of that assignment. So you fast forward to 2021, when I had the opportunity to go to U.S. Army North, which was a subordinate headquarters of Northern Command at Fort Sam Houston, Texas, and finish up on the tail end of the Title 10 federal resources for the COVID vaccination centers across the country. That was part of the role and responsibility I had, as well as working with our local state, regional, national partners for hurricane preparation, fire preparation, and then being a part of the Operation Allied Welcome after the airport fell in Afghanistan, and bringing 75,000 Afghans to different locations across the U.S. The Army North headquarters, which at the time was commanded by Lieutenant General Laura Richardson, who is now the second four-star female Army officer, commander. I was able to work directly for her for 6 months, another major foundational assignment. And to be a part of that operation of welcoming the Afghans that had devoted their lives to supporting the U.S. forces in Afghanistan and finding safety for them and integrating them into our communities with the Department of State and immigration offices across the country was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see those young Afghan children step foot on U.S. soil and wonder what their lives are going to be like 20 years from now. Was an emotional event that I'll never forget. So, sir, great question. And again, like I said, you never really know when you're in the assignment the value that it will bring later in your career. But both of those assignments were absolutely very foundational and developmental for where I am now.
Yeah, well, Jennifer, I might one more quick question.
Sure.
My tenure as the adjutant general was marked by ongoing deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. Obviously, the picture internationally has changed. What can Mainers look forward to with regard to the deployment of their sons and daughters in our current environment?
So currently, we are doing many peacekeeping operations. We've had recent deployments to Poland in support of the activities that are going on there, and then continually have units assigned to the southwest border and in different commands in the European Command, Africa Command. And so as we have often relied on the predictability of a five-year window of mobilization and training for our folks, that we're more on path with that right now than we were in the heat of the global war on terrorism deployment. So our units fortunately have that opportunity to train and reset and prepare for whatever tasking they might have. And the same is true with, to make this not all Army-centric, but to talk about the work that the Air National Guard continues to do in their mission. And obviously, they have more frequent rotations, recently returned from time in Guam, and continue their daily operations as they support and refuel aircraft as they're deploying across the world.
Well, General, that's...
Go ahead, General Willoughby.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, that summarizes for me the answers to those two questions. The reason that Governor Mills selected Diane, she's an excellent choice. Diane, we look forward to seeing you again when Cindy and I get back to Maine and sometime in May. Hope maybe to stand in the winner's circle in the Jim Dunn Stable race someday again with you. And we're headed to Tampa this afternoon to see the University of Maine baseball team play. So congratulations.
All right, go Blue.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations. I don't need to wish you good luck because you make your own luck. We look forward to seeing you when we get home.
Thank you, General.
General Bill Libby, thank you so much for calling in. He is a former Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard. And General Dunn, I want to clarify something or just expand upon something that General Libby said. You and your husband run a horse stable on top of everything else because, you know, horses don't take that much work, right? But when he talked about the winner's circle, that's what he was talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have the great opportunity to be a part of a very historic part of Maine's history. I guess there's a little double, but be a part of Maine's history when it comes to the standardbred harness racing industry. And we have deep roots, both sides of our family, and enjoy the work that we're able to do with our equine partners and athletes.
Probably a little competitive there too. We're going to go to John. John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hi. Just as an aside, I went to the University of Maine with Bill Libby. I also was one of the officers in the 1970s that came on board the Maine National Guard. Bill Libby, I call him because he was a personal friend of mine. And if he says you're doing a good job, you must be doing a good job. And what I'm calling about is Maine Veterans Services. And Maine Veterans Services, when in the 1970s and the early 80s, was the best organization ever for veterans to ever use to address their problems with the VA and to get VA benefits. And then it went, I don't know what happened, but the Maine Veterans Services became a very, very disorganized, very, very superficial help only. And lately I've been hearing a totally different thing from all the veterans. They prefer the Maine Veterans Services for their assistance because the Maine Veterans Services all of a sudden has become very responsible, very, very organized. It gives them the assistance they need, and it also, it seems to be doing the outreach that it needs to be done. And what I'm, my comment is, please don't ever stop that again, because during the interim between the 1970s and the 1980s, when I needed the help, it was wonderful, and then all of a sudden it just dropped through the floor. And now it seems to be coming back to the point where it was before.
John,
so whatever
thank you.
You're
yeah.
doing, keep it up.
John, thank you so much for calling in. And General Dunn, I just want to ask you, for those who are listening who may be veterans and not aware of the work of the Bureau of Veterans Services, what can somebody expect there? What would somebody go to the Bureau for?
Thank you. And thank you so much, John. And a huge shout out to Dave Richmond and his team of Maine Veteran Services workers that are tirelessly working for the good of our veterans here in Maine and have been recognized nationally for their great work that they do. So to answer your question, it's everything from A to Z, and we want to be that one single stop point of assistance and support for every veteran that we have in our state, whether it's from the very beginning of initiating a claim for benefits and services, or for those that are already in the system, if there's additional needs that they might have, how to access new or improved benefits, to helping folks with homelessness, affordable housing, providing different medical services and care. The list just goes on in terms of what Maine Veteran Services is doing. And I do appreciate and acknowledge the fact that they are significantly involved in outreach opportunities. There are probably 2 to 3 to 4 events that happen every single day that the leadership and the workers within Maine Bureau of Veteran Services are out in our community across the state providing access and information, because we can't reach everybody. And it is really important to spread the word that whether someone is near a local veteran service office or can access online or phone call. I do referrals every day. I ran into someone on Friday night that was not even a Mainer, but was a veteran that lives here in our state and needed resources for another veteran. And so I reached right out. I sent a note to Dave Richmond and I said, this is what this person needs. Can you please have someone reach out to them and connect them to services that were only available outside our state, but I knew our state contacts could assist and had confidence that they would do that immediately and get the services that the individual needed. So I think that that is great to hear that we have a positive feedback. I will definitely pass that on and know for a fact that the group here is just fantastic and something that sometimes gets overlooked. They also are very involved in all the cemeteries that are here in Maine, our veteran cemeteries, and have staff. Not enough, but we do care for the, you know, the grounds and the services and constantly. That's another whole aspect of what we're doing in our communities to take care of our veterans. And so the list goes on of what they have available to folks. They have a great website. I apologize, I don't have it right off the top of my head. But if someone were to Google Maine Bureau of Veteran Services, they would come up with a website that has great resources.
John, thanks so much for your call. We're going to go down to York and David. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm very curious as to how well prepared we are for an internal threat. Currently, the FBI is now saying that the greatest terrorist threat is from within our country. I know we had some militia group legislation trying to pass last month here in the state. I don't know where it went. Maybe somebody could refresh my memory. We actually have some U.S. House of Representative members calling for a civil war. Trump is calling to pardon all insurrectionists. And, you know, we have groups like Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, Boogaloo Boys. And in 2022, the Southern Poverty Law Center said that there are 9 active hate and anti-government groups. And these people are armed to the teeth.
Sure. General Dunn. Yeah, I want to ask General Dunn, what we were talking at the beginning of the program about how it's a different world than it was when you began your military career. Can you talk about David's concerns?
Yes, thank you so much. And so not just militarily, but this is where I'll put the commissioner hat on in terms of roles and responsibilities here in the state of Maine as a cabinet member with the governor, for the governor, working with the other commissioners that also are very concerned about the safety of our citizens of the state of Maine. So working closely with the Commissioner for Public Safety, Commissioner Soszczyk, and the resources that he has available within his department and other departments that have similar responsibilities as we all serve our citizens here in the state of Maine to maintain the safety of our state. And then obviously in the event that there were something that was more serious that required the resources of the military upon activation of the governor and making sure that we are as prepared as possible. But I think that that's really important for folks to understand that the partnerships that we have within the state of Maine and the roles and responsibilities as commissioners and how we work together to achieve those end states that we all want to ensure is that we can live safely and freely here in the state of Maine.
Are you and Commissioner Soszczyk and also federal agencies such as the FBI regularly meeting to talk about the internal threat?
There are multiple councils and commissions and committees that have interagency coordination and membership. So yes, and as another role that isn't actively promoted out there, but as the governor's Homeland Security advisor, that is something that is important in a role that I serve in and working with other federal agencies for Homeland Security and partnerships that we have here in the state of Maine. So those are ongoing collaborations that we have to make sure that we share information to make sure that we understand what those threats are and how to best mitigate them.
David, thanks so much for your question. We are speaking with Brigadier General Diane Dunn. We're going to take another quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can get an email in, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Joining me today, General Diane Dunn, Maine's new Commissioner of the Department of Defense, Veterans and Emergency Management, and Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard. Share your questions or comments with a quick email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Carl. My late father, Benjamin Eugene Moore, made his career with the Maine National Guard, starting in Belfast for 30 years and then ending his career in Bangor as a chief warrant officer, too. He would be proud to have a female leader. So, Carl, thank you so much for that email. I wanted to ask you, General Dunn, about recruitment, because we know that so many, not just in the military, so many industries in Maine are really struggling to hire as many people as they'd like, whether it's nursing or teachers or, I mean, manufacturing, you can name them. And I'm wondering if the Maine National Guard is facing the same challenges.
Yes, it was interesting for my 2 years that I was stepped aside from my role here in the Guard and served at the University of Maine and heard enrollment in the same terminology that we now talk about recruiting. And as you said, every industry is faced with these challenges of having a workforce that is available and trained to be able to do the skills that we need and to look forward into the future and what are the future skills that we need. And so the Maine National Guard, Maine Emergency Management, Maine Bureau of Veteran Services are no different. All three elements still struggle with hiring and making sure that we have as many people as we can and that we're authorized to fill the spaces that we have to be trained and ready to prepared to respond, whether it's here at home or abroad. It is a significant challenge that industry-wide we're struggling with and nationwide. And so we talk a lot with our other partners in other states. What are they doing? What are the lessons learned? How do you apply those to your unique needs within your state and trying to be creative and innovative to meet the needs and recruit the population that we need in our different departments.
What are you looking for? Who makes a good Maine National Guard soldier or airman?
we are looking for the best and the brightest, right? And sometimes people, there was this old myth that someone would join the National Guard if they had no other plans in life. And an educator flight one time where we had educators fly in one of the Black Hawks. And then when they came back, we said, now you understand the expertise that's required to be in that cockpit. You don't want just anyone flying you around. And so helping to recognize the fact that the skills that are required for many of the jobs, technically, and just the level of proficiency that's required is so significant. We want to make sure that we have the best and the brightest, and recognizing that those that are willing, the challenge is many people for medical reasons or fitness reasons, we continue to see a decline in eligibility. So you get in the front end of that and you look at prevention, right? What can we do in our communities to help people that might want to join to have maximum availability of eligibility? So having the right fitness levels and the medical, and making sure that we can take care of people's medical needs beforehand so that they're eligible to join.
And just for those who maybe are not familiar with what it means to be a part of the Army or Air National Guard, we're talking about a commitment of a weekend a month, correct? And then 2 weeks every 6 months, is that right? I'm trying to remember. And then possible deployments to places like the border or Europe.
Right. Yes. So it is, the units, the Army and Air National Guard, have a statutory requirement to perform their training once a month. And that's typically a Saturday and Sunday once a month. And then they also have 15 days of annual training per year. And that, again, helps with developing the proficiency that's required so that they're capable and ready when called upon, and having the predictability of what that window might be, then you stagger your training so that you're doing the more individual skill. And we have the crawl, walk, run mentality that you learn and then relearn and then become more proficient. And from an individual to a larger group all the way up to the unit, so that you have that collective experience and capability.
And is there still an age cap of 35?
No, the ages continue to expand, right? And that may be very likely because just in general, life expectancy is much longer. And then, 20s or 40s are the new 20s. So the age cap is different. It depends on the service.
Okay.
But if someone is interested, we always say, give us a call and we'll see what we can do. Someone with prior service has a different age cap than someone who is just looking to join without any prior service.
We have an email here from Joe. Historically, the National Guard sporadically helped with emergency services, such as helicopter rescues when it could. Life Flight came in and does a great job, but its existence now to a great degree precludes National Guard helping in this way. Emergency medical service, specifically rescue units, have costs that are growing exponentially, often severely cramping small town budgets. Do you see any coordinated efforts between these emergency services in the future?
Great question. And there is not, I would just clarify that there isn't a distinction that because Life Flight is here, that the Guard isn't utilized. It's a tiered response, tiered capability. So there, even now, our medevac unit will do certain rescues, particularly when the requirements for the rescue exceed the capabilities or the functionality of whatever other resource. And that's true of whether it's engineering assets that need, if there isn't something that exists in the local community, we never want to compete with, businesses for emergency response if there's a capability there. But in particular for the answer for Life Flight. So there are times when the National Guard will have a capability that doesn't exist for Life Flight or for our warden services. And so they train. Many of the pilots have been previously in the National Guard that go to Life Flight. So they have shared experiences and skill sets, but there are some equipment, hoist and those type of things that may be different for the National Guard that doesn't exist in the civilian sector, but we work and train collectively.
And to be clear, I think the National Guard assisted in a rescue on Katahdin last year, correct? Last fall?
There, believe it or not, there's rescues that are very, very frequent. So, yeah. And again, depending on wind, weather, night, the patient criticality, all of those things are factors that come into play. And so when the local officials send the request, obviously it would go to typically go to Life Flight first. And again, if they're busy, they might already be en route with a patient somewhere. And then those emergency managers understand what their level of care might be and who can provide that. So that's where there is the interoperability between the different agencies.
General Dunn, I'm looking at the clock and I realize there's not much time to ask you all the questions I want to ask, but I know that your predecessor, General Farnham, got a great grant to help for dental services for veterans. And I suspect you'd like to talk about that because it's just being implemented now, correct?
Absolutely. And I was looking at the notes that came out from the governor's office yesterday or today about that. And again, we want to send a shout out to Sarah Sherman in the Bureau of Veteran Services and her work on those efforts. I believe that it is about $300,000 worth of dental care and partnering with a local organization. And I know there's over 20 different providers across the state that are participating in this program and will continue to provide dental care for our veterans that don't otherwise have insurance or ability to get that. And so I'm excited to be able to engage with those different organizations that are supporting our veterans and thanking them personally. And that was something I exchanged an email with Sarah with last night so that we can continue to recognize that community partnership that we have with providers that are going above and beyond in supporting our veterans. And we're truly blessed for that here in Maine.
All right. And I also wanted to talk about, I know that Maine National Guard soldiers and Air National Guard airmen have recently trained both in Alaska and have done special sort of really large scale exercises in the Arctic. And if you could talk about why such an emphasis on the Arctic today.
Again, where we are in the world and what's going on, right? That's an important thing, and being prepared and ready and training in the environments that where we can have the opportunity to gain the most proficiency. We are one of the original members of the Arctic Interest Council. I can't remember the year that came into being, and we have been very engaged with Arctic interests for the National Guard and partnerships throughout the U.S., training and looking at equipment requirements so that if, in fact, we were to have to deploy to Arctic environments, we would already understand and know what is required. We'd have the proper equipment. We want to be a partner in those lanes, whether it's in Alaska or anywhere in the high north. But part of it is understanding the environment and the equipment requirements, whether it's personal equipment or unit equipment. So the Air National Guard has been very involved in that, supporting United States Northern Command and many of their federal exercises for several years. And obviously, we also have a mountain infantry unit here in Brewer that also from time to time has had the opportunity to train in cold weather environments, and with our state partner in Montenegro and training in the northern part of Montenegro, which is very much like Maine, mountainous and has its fair share of cold weather and snow, and making sure that we will be a good partner and can train with them as well.
And I read that these training exercises are side by side with other NATO and Scandinavian countries. So really a big deal.
That is a huge benefit, is being able to work with multiple nations in an event like that, because there's so much that's gained, right? We learn best practices, what other nations are doing, and how to be able to be a great NATO partner and stand by side by side. And then the personal human benefit that comes from developing those relationships are you know, just lifelong relationships that are built and continue well past military service.
Well, General Dunn, I'm out of time. I'm not out of questions, but I'm out of time. Thank you so much for spending an hour with us, Brigadier General Diane Dunn, first woman to lead Maine's National Guard, is also, by the way, Commissioner of the Department of Defense, Veterans, and Emergency Management. Today's sound engineer is Jane Donahue. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about how books have become targets and what librarians are facing today all over Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.